podcast in the world. From WWE to TNA Impact, by way of the NWA, it's time for Reffin' It Up with legendary referee Brian Heppner and guest host, Mr. Reffin' Rant himself, Jimmy Corderas. An all-new episode starts in... This is Reffin' It Up.
Welcome back to Reffin' It Up. I am RJ. I am joined by the two greatest professional wrestling referees of all time. He's styling, he's profiling. The sun's out, so his guns are out, Mr. Jimmy Corderas. And
hey, wait a minute. That's my gimmick.
And he's Mr. Sunday night, Mr. Every Night, Mr. Brian Heppner. But first, Jimmy, I'll ignore what Brian just said because you're making it look damn good.
Well, thank you very much. But you know, in this business, it happens all the time. Gimmick infringement is nothing new. So, if it works, I'm going to steal it. If it doesn't work, guess what? Put the guns away.
Oh, man, that's I had to poke at that because it's like we got to get I get laughing sometimes, you know. It's been a tough couple days, but you know, it is what it is. I'm glad to be on here with you guys as always. Looking forward to this week's show with Shannon Moore. Kind of dive deep into you know, his career and in and out of the ring too. So, but yeah. Brian, what's up, buddy?
Not a lot, man. You just stole my thunder. Jimmy, you are looking good, but I have to remember we are only audio, so that's great.
That's the only reason I'm wearing this shirt.
Jimmy, you look great. Well, man.
Thanks, man.
Well, like I always like to say, I have a face for radio.
Well, I got to say this, RJ, before we continue, I was inspired after getting to see Brian live and in living color this year in Philly. So I got back and I'm not doing heavies. I'm just doing reps and getting back in shape.
And Jimmy, believe it or not, anybody that's out there listening, when you get to your age, my age as well, going lighter is not a bad thing. I'm done with that heavy shit where I'm getting a hernia every other fucking week. Going light, there's nothing wrong. It's just keeping your body, it'll tone you. You'll see. You keep at it and watch.
Well, I'll be the complete opposite.
Lay off the gimmick, brother.
Yes.
I'll be the complete other end of the spectrum. I'll be going back and forth the refrigerator all the time. I'm not terrible, but I've been better, put it that way.
That's cardio.
There you go.
Well, that's, I keep trying to tell that to my wife and she's like, no, she's like, she's got one of those little, not little, but the Nordic Track. It's not Nordic Track, but it's one of those things where she does a lot of the cardio stuff there. So
yeah, you can put a lot of stuff in your plate. That's light weights. That's cool. Just do reps.
Exactly. you gotta eat those vegetables, but, you know, we're getting off in the weeds, pun intended, I guess, but why don't we do this? Why do we get the show started in our first count?
This is your one count.
This past week, Pro Wrestling Insider reported that Michael Levin, who served as the Vice President of International Events and the General Manager of Emerging Markets, exited WWE after 7 years with the company. PWI claims Levin's position was quote unquote phased out as part of an ongoing TKO group, coming together of WWE and UFC. Guys, this is, and we also saw as well, I wanted to lump this in, that Fightful Select learned that Levin's departure was also reported that Steve Rubin, WWE employee for 26 years, is also gone as well. So I want to put that in there as well. He was a senior director of TV event relations, and he's been there since 98 as an assistant. Mm-hmm. So a couple of big names out there, guys. And this is something that, you know, a lot of people, us included here in the wrestling podcasting world, we're talking about, is this going to happen? Is it not going to happen? Jimmy, man, what are your thoughts after hearing these two guys are not with the company anymore?
Well, it's always a terrible thing when somebody is dismissed from a position, especially a guy like Steve Rubin, who's been there for for decades. I've known Steve for a long time. Good dude, did his job very well. Michael Levin, I'm not familiar with. I know the name and I know his position. That's about it. But it just seems like an unfortunate part of business is a turnaround. When new management takes over and there's a new regime in place, they tend to reset the table. And that's what it seems like they're doing, because there have been a lot of names that have been released recently in the WWE and a lot of longtime employees that have been gone. But you look at the position of someone like a Michael Levin, who is the general manager of emerging markets and, president of international events. And WWE is exploring going overseas more and doing a lot of big time pay-per-views and that sort of stuff overseas. And I guess that's more a Nick Khan thing. I'm not 100% sure, but it feels like that's his market strategy to make WWE more of a global product. And in that case, I guess he's looking at it from a different set of eyes and seeing who he can replace. I hate to put it that way, because Brian knows and I know everybody's apparently replaceable in this business, whether it's on the business side or on the TV presentation side. So unfortunate to see those guys go, but Steve is good at what he does. He'll land on his feet again. And as far as Michael Levin, a position like that, obviously he'll land on his feet as well somewhere down the line. But it's just a sign of things changing overall in the WWE.
And like you, Jimmy, obviously I've heard of Michael Levin. I don't know him per se. I knew who he was back when I worked with WWE. But like you, I know Ruben. I do. And he was a great guy. But what makes me kind of mad, now we don't know, because it's unclear if he were to quit. We don't know if that's part of what happened or not. That's unclear. We don't know if he got fired. We just know he's not with the company longer. If he quit, cool. I'm not mad. But if he got fired, I'm mad. And I'll tell you why. Because who are you going to bring in with more than 26 years of experience where he was at? In his department, where the loyalty sometimes that WWE does not show has been forever. It's been forever. I mean, I've got dear friends that are sitting on the sidelines right now that had no business being fired. And he's one of them. Now, if he quit, I'll take all that back. But if he did not quit, I think it's a shame. I think it's shameful. And he did a good job at what he did. And like I said, I knew him. I talked to him. I called him Rube. Just a really, really great guy. And it just sucks. It sucks. And if I'm AEW, I'm looking at trying to scoop this guy up if it was me. But I'm not AEW, believe me. I have no idea what their thought process is. But anyway, but that's all I'll say about that.
And who knows
if they do. That's definitely for sure, because that's a guy with knowledge part as senior director of TV event relations, that's a big deal. He knows if they start running house shows, you got to have this guy on board.
Well, you know what? Let's stop and talk about that for a minute. Why are they not running house shows, Jimmy? Give me a reason.
I wish I could give you a good reason, because yes, they run three television shows a week, and a lot of times it's only two nights worth of work.
Correct.
And they allow their talent to work elsewhere and do some other shots. But the main money generator is now TV, apparently. And back in the day, house shows is where you made your money. Live events is where you made your money. Even to this day, WWE still running live events. They're making a killing because the production values are very much low. You got your talent costs. You've got, your crew costs. But the crew costs are cut way down because you don't have the TV crew. You don't have all that set. You don't have the pyro. You don't have all the bells and whistles. So it's a moneymaker. And especially, as much as we critique their product, they got a loyal fan base that would go to their shows. Run some damn house shows. Why not?
Well, Jimmy, you're not new to this game. they would have a better product if they did house shows, because A, they would discover the talent they've got, which is 1,000 people that are sitting in the back of the stage wanting to work, that they've got signed, that they could actually put to work, get them some ring time out in front of a crowd and let them work and see what you have that you have signed. Not only that, but you get your name out there, your name everywhere. There's so many win-wins, and it's not a money thing according to what we all think and know. So I don't understand it. They could easily do a house show Monday and Tuesday, close to where they are for Dynamite. If they only did 2,000 people, so what? It's 2,000 people. 1,500 is fine. I mean, and your budget's cut, like you said, basically in half or more than that, really, because you know, you don't have a bunch of the trussing and all that stuff and the lighting and the ramp and the stage. So, I mean, it's a no-win situation and a no-brainer for them to not do it. I mean, it's just, I said a no-win. I meant a win-win.
A win-win. Yeah. No, I got it. I understood what you meant, but really quickly to, you know, piggyback off that too, getting those reps in for the guys in the ring, you know, not only getting talent exposed to an audience, these guys get to work together. And just like we talked about with Chavo a long time ago, when he was on a while back, you get in the ring, you try stuff, you see what works in front of a live audience. You know, if you get crickets, hey, you know what? Let's stop doing that.
Right.
Do something else. You know, you get to try different stuff out and see what works. And not only that, your body gets accustomed to it too. As much as it takes a pounding every day, you develop the bump callus. You know what I mean? So
yeah, no. And Jimmy, do you want your guys working against, and nothing against the indie wrestler, nothing, but these inexperienced indie wrestlers and getting hurt on their show?
Right. You're running risk.
Right. You can keep your John Moxley's, your Edges, or Adam Copeland. Sorry, I just can't do it. Your Christians, you know, you can keep those guys off of house shows unless they want to do it or make a special appearance and do something in ring. But I mean, but otherwise, get those young guys out there. Get your champion out there. Advertise him. Get him out there. You know what I mean? Your Samoa Joe's, who I know doesn't mind working house shows. I'm not saying he loves it. He's probably going to call me tonight and say, "The fuck did you say?" but what I'm saying is, it's not going to hurt them at all. It's only going to help. Plus, it helps them with story direction. So we used to use house shows, Jimmy, as you know. I remember when we had Batista, we had John Cena, we had Randy Orton, who none of these people knew, none of them. And that's how they got their experience. So anyway, we're getting elongated with this. I didn't mean to go that way, but golly,
no,
it just sounds like you should be doing them.
But you also have to take into account too, though, is you see this sometimes with WWE, not so much anymore, but you can run these house shows, you know, run them in different markets than you are doing right now. Don't run the same markets over and over again. You want to get new fans, even though you want the existing fans. And then secondly, do a lot of, you know, PR and advertising, because I can't remember when it was, but I think when they first ran them, a lot of people didn't know they were in the town because they didn't advertise with radio, TV.
Yeah, you know, that would be where I worked, WTNA. I've literally gone to a restaurant across the street from the venue, sat down with my crew and said, "You guys going to the show?" And they were literally like, "What show?" And I'm like, "You're kidding me. You're kidding me."
And it's right across the street. What? It's not on the sign. It's not on the billboard.
And what was Dixie's major? What was Dixie's major? Do y'all know?
Was she like advertising?
Marketing.
Marketing, yeah.
Oh, but what? Wait a minute. In marketing, what are the first four letters in marketing?
M-A-R-K.
Okay.
Mark.
Yeah. That's the only one thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, moving on, can't get better transition than that, folks. Apparently, Christ. A report came out to Fightful Select on this past Saturday claiming that Becky Lynch has approximately 3 weeks left on her current deal with WWE. And as of right now, and I haven't seen any other reports, she has not signed a new one.
Yes, she has.
Man, this is
yes, well, she officially, has.
Officially.
She had, well, officially bullshit. She's has. She
official,
ain't going,
officially.
She ain't going nowhere.
Oh, know I that. Know, but it's just, you know, it's one of those things people like to put it out there and say, hey, she's not technically signed yet, even though she's the world champion for on the women's side. But I think this is, it's only a matter of time.
It's the Drew McIntyre yes. deal. Same thing over again. And look, yeah. she would have to lose her belt. What, this Saturday?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. If that were to happen and her not resign, is that happening? Guarantee you don't. She's resigned. She came back actually and did a favor for the WWE because of she wanted some time off. And right. Because of injuries, she came back and went ahead and pulled through. They rewarded her with the belt, which they should. I think that's stand up-ish. I mean, I really do. And she's not going anywhere, guys.
Well, I got to tell you this. If anybody's expecting her to show up on a Wednesday night and drop the title in the garbage pail, it ain't happening, boys.
No, it's not.
Yeah, I know. Less than 3 weeks away. Oh, you know what? This is probably some of the greatest work that WWE is doing, getting these websites out there reporting on stuff like this. You know it's a done. Drew McIntyre, hotter than a pistol. Did anybody think he was going anywhere else?
No.
Or had a desire to go anywhere else as hot as he was? And would WWE invest that much time and effort in him if it wasn't a done deal? Whether it's a handshake deal or just a word of mouth or just a, you know, whatever it is, Becky Lynch, I feel, is not going anywhere. You can say all you want. You can dream all you want and say, well, what about the matchups if she was going to go here and there? You know what? Great. That would be great. But guess what? Her husband just resigned. Yeah. I don't think she's going away. They have a child. Mm-hmm. They're not going to split that team up. No.
I think WWE likes this. I do, because it's happening continuously. Like it's suspense. Like, are they going to show up on Dynamite? And I think also it makes them feel like we won.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't going anywhere over there, folks. Sorry, Tony Khan. But I'm sorry. And I also think it's a leveraging thing where they figure out the figures that are being thrown out. I mean,
yeah.
Hey.
But I like the way they twist the screws though sometimes and just get those people going, I can't wait for him to show up in Dynamite or Collision or whatever. Well, not Collision, but Dynamite at least anyway.
Oh my God. They put her on that.
Collision's still going?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's being Collision.
Is that Saturday?
Is the name apropos? Is that what
pretty
you
pretty much.
They picked the best name for a show with that one. Collision Course. Wow. Let's not get into that, guys.
Wait, when you're running full speed and you hit a big brick wall, what is it?
Painful?
Yeah, it's a major collision.
Good.
I'm bananas.
Oh, well, real quick. I know we need to move on.
Yeah.
Why do they have two programs and they run them back to back? Why do they? I don't get that.
I think it's more because of the NBA playoffs and that, because usually Rampage is on Friday nights. And now they've been running. At one time, a couple of weeks ago, they ran it after Dynamite, and lately they've been doing it on Saturday nights after Collision.
But so nobody that's recorded, it. Right?
Yeah.
So nobody even knows how to follow the show.
Well, they've been doing it. It's been between basketball and hockey, because I think hockey was on TNT and TBS for a little while there. It's since moved over, but we'll see.
Yeah.
But why don't we do this? Before we bring in Shannon Moore, why don't we send it up to a ref and review? Because I know this is going to be a good one.
This is Ref and Review.
This past week, guys, on Raw, before the match between Kofi and Gunther. I'll tee this up to you, Jimmy, because you brought this up when we all went over it. A little interesting confusion, what have you, with Eddie Arango. Great, great referee, first and foremost. Won't put that out there. Does a great job, but...
Well, be careful the way you use the word great.
Okay.
He does his
job. Well-versed. Yeah,
he's not a great referee. He's a good referee.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, no, not a Jimmy, shot. That wasn't a shot. Up, yeah. That's not a dig. That's
no, just... it's not at all.
Yeah, exactly.
There are great referees that are retired.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Or not working.
Happily.
Right, exactly.
I'm sitting with two of them.
Well, I didn't say I was. I'm just saying.
Well, they're
Well, they're a great referee.
Well, we'll leave it to you then.
It's up to him to be great. That's all I'm saying.
Yes, yes.
But Jimmy, yeah, this was one of those things that you brought it up to, and I went back and watched it a couple of times, just to set it up to you a little bit, is Gunther was knocked down outside the ring after Kofi attacked him before the bell rang.
Mm-hmm.
Keep that in mind, guys, before the bell rang. And Eddie, you know, basically backed up Kofi, and Gunther was still sitting down outside the ring. Then the bell rang to start the match without him getting on his feet. Is that typically something that, you know, is supposed to be done? Is it something that someone gives him an Iggy in his ear to do, or?
From a technically correct standpoint, the match doesn't start until both competitors are on their feet and in the ring after the introductions and all the ballyhoo and whistles. What happened here was Kofi attacked Gunther outside before he made it into the ring. They had their, you know, back and forth, you know, Kofi going after the knee of Gunther. And, you know, finally they work their way back into the ring. Kofi's waiting in the opposite corner. Gunther looked like he was about to sell up. And I thought once he got to his feet, the bell would ring. But before he got to his feet, the bell rang. And that Kofi came over because the bell rang now. So it's on, right? Shit's on. Now, the problem I had with it was wait till the guy gets to his feet. That's what the proper procedure is. Because back in the day, and Brian, I think, I don't know if they were still doing it back when you were with us, when you joined it, but the bell, we didn't single for the bell to start the match way back when we were still wearing the blue shirts and the bow ties.
Mm-hmm.
That came from the truck to the timekeeper. Yaten would ring the bell when they told him to. So anything could be going on, and we all of a sudden the bell would ring out of nowhere. Okay, I guess match is on. instead of pointing, you know what I mean, or doing anything like that. And that's what this felt like. I don't know. I was trying to catch if Eddie actually pointed for the bell, or they just said, to hell with it, ring the bell, and told, I think it's Tommy Carlucci's son.
Oh.
Who rings the bell now at ringside, I think. I could be wrong. But whether it came from the truck, they jumped the gun, or if it was Eddie, he jumped the gun. Either way, the bell shouldn't have rang then. And okay, go ahead, Brian. I know you want to say something.
No. I just want to ask you a question. So do you have a problem with if they weren't on their feet, but there was physical contact, and that's what made the bell ring?
I think they would have to, you know, in a perfect world of presenting it as a sport, if they rolled into the ring and they were grounding and pounding, I would have a problem with the bell even ringing there. Separate the guys because the match is not officially started, if you know what I mean.
No, I do.
Yeah, get them completely separated, make sure they're ready to go, and then call for the bell. Which is better than hitting the bell and letting them fight outside for 5 minutes.
Well, that's...
Because this is how you do an easy fix. Last week on Dynamite, the opening match, Orange Cassidy versus Trent Barretta, the bell rings, they fight outside, they're fighting into the crowd, and poor Paul Turner, I know he didn't want to be out there with them, he's just doing what he's told, because the referees there got their thumb up their butts, they have no say and no, they just have to do what they're told. He's out there following him around the entire arena. It's not a false count anywhere. It's not a no count out match. Then they fight back into the ring. And then they go back out, and then he starts a count. Then? Come on, man. The easy fix was you want to fight for 5 minutes outside. Start fighting outside before the match starts. Then you can fight all you want. Fight all day long. Fight for the whole hour. I don't care.
Right.
But, you know, once you roll in, then you can do the start the bell drop.
Well, the only thing I will say, and this was later in my career, this was in TNA, and we did start many matches, like when it was a jump start, it'd be like a ding, ding, ding kind of thing. I get what you're saying, Jimmy, but it is wrestling, and I don't know.
No, I get it.
You're making sense. It's not like you're not making sense. And I'll be honest, and I always will be about this, I did not see that spot because I was out on the grill. I ran back in and I just heard the bell ring and they were in physicality. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? And I text you guys immediately and went, what's going on? Why was the bell ringing like that? And you guys explained it through text, which we all know that's very hard to understand when it comes to elongated stuff like that. So I didn't see it. I really didn't. Right. So I really need to go back and watch that, I guess, in order to weigh on it. But the way you're describing it, go ahead, Jimmy. Go ahead.
No, it was a little, it's a little nitpicky, but at the same time, if we keep talking on here about enforcing the rules and, you know, and using them correctly.
Yeah.
And I thought in that situation, it was, it's a minute little thing to a lot of people, but you know, to me, it was
it can't be big. It can't be a big thing.
Right.
I understand.
Yeah. It's definitely been those little things.
And again, I hate to keep comparing apples and oranges over here, but when they did it in the other world last week, and it just, stuff doesn't make sense. And somebody actually buzzed me on Twitter. He says, what are some of the most important things that a referee has to know when they're on TV or pay-per-view and stuff like that? And I said, how much time you got? And I only got so many characters to type on my Twitter machine. You know what I mean? So I gave him like the top three, like always, you know, positioning, make sure you're, you know, out of camera shot, be invisible until you need to be visible, you know?
Right.
You know, be the communication for the talent between the truck, between the gorilla position, and between each other. Help them to communicate with each other and do it discreetly. Don't be overt, like you're walking over and going, okay, 4 minutes. And everybody knows you're passing signals. And the other thing is, enforce the rules and keep your cadence consistent throughout the match. Those are three, but there's a whole bunch of more, as you know, Brian.
Yeah.
Work the horseshoe, and all that stuff.
Yeah. So basically, Jimmy, you're kind of saying he jumped him on the outside, because this is the part I didn't see. He jumped him on the outside.
Right.
Beat him up. I guess he threw him in the ring, correct?
Yeah.
Got on him more, got some more heat, jumped on him.
Mm-hmm.
And then out of nowhere, the bell rung.
No, Kofi got pushed back to the opposite corner.
By the ref?
And Gunther was still down in the other corner. So it looked like he was about to sell up, but before he could sell up, ding, ding, ding.
That sounds like a truck thing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think it came. That's what I'm thinking. I think it came from the truck, and it reminded me of the old days.
Yeah.
You know, where they would ring the bell before guys even had their gear off, like their entrance gear.
Right.
You know, it just felt weird. That's all.
Hey, man, this is a good conversation. I love it.
Well, it definitely was a good catch, because that's something, like you said, Jimmy, it's, you know, you see those are the old school days, you get them from the truck, but
it could have been worse. Could have taken a pile driver on the steps and a slingshot into the ring frame and no seller.
Don't get me started
on that stuff.
We don't have time for that, Jimmy.
I may have to sing a song about it later, but anyway.
Oh, shit. Here we go.
Oh, jeez. Well, with that being said, why don't we take a break and get a word from our great sponsor this week, Bascope Post, and we'll be right back with our special guest, Mr. Shannon Moore. This spring, the best box you'll open up all month is from Bascope Post and their seasonal lineup of must-have Box of Awesome collections. The Box of Awesome is filled with carefully chosen gear from the best small brands across the world. Guys, let's see what I got this month. First of all, it comes in this fantastic lockbox that you probably can use for pretty much anything after you empty it. But absolutely phenomenal. I got some commando wire saws here that I can use to cut up some tree branches in case I need to get a fire. I got a great knife here that I can use if I go hunting, that I can use, as well as some great, great reading material, surviving the great outdoors. Just an absolutely great way of surviving when I'm out there camping with my son. Whether you want to drink and eat more awesome, or dress and travel more awesome, or explore more awesome, Box of Awesome has you covered this spring. To get started, take the quiz at boxofawesome.com. Your answers will help them pick the right Box of Awesome for you. It's free to join, and they release new items every month across a ton of different categories. When you become a member, you'll have access to stellar discounts across the plethora of products. We're talking 30% off or more sometimes. Plus, with each Box of Awesome, you'll support small businesses. 90% of everything that comes in your Box of Awesome is from a small, up-and-coming brand. It's free to sign up, and you can skip a month or cancel at any time. Get a free mystery gift with your first monthly shipment when you sign up at boxofawesome.com and enter the code REFIN at checkout. That's boxofawesome.com, code REFIN, R-E-F-I-N,
for a free mystery gift with your first monthly shipment. That address one more time is boxofawesome.com, promo code REFIN, R-E-F-I-N.
This is your two count.
We are back with our second count, and I am honored to welcome our guest this week, former WCW, WWE, and TNA wrestler, Mr. Shannon Moore. Shannon, welcome to the show, man. How are you, man?
What's up, dude? Yeah, I'm good, man. Thanks for having me on. It's good to catch up with you guys.
Shannon Mo! Yeah.
What's up?
What's up, buddy?
You know, just hanging out.
Hey man, I don't know if you'll believe this or not, but I have missed you, dude. I have been talking about having you on the show for quite a while, and it finally came down to where, all right, I'm reaching out now, and I'm going to get in touch with him. And I had your number, and it's not any good, so I had to reach out to you. I know, so I had to reach out to your good dear friend Matt Hardy, and he got back to me. He was like, "Hell yeah, give Shannon a call." So I was like, nice. Fuck it. Here we go. And you were very, very responsive and happy to be on. And I'm so happy for that.
Cool, man. Yeah. Thanks for thinking about me. And dude, I've missed you guys too, man. Like it's weird. It's weird whenever you had that, you know, we had that core group of guys that traveled and hung out for so long. And then, you know, it's just kind of like it goes away and then everybody goes their separate ways. But, you know, occasionally like things will pop up and you're like, man, I miss that dude. I'm horrible. One thing I'm so bad at that I got to get better at is like reaching out to people, you know, that I love and my friends. Cause I just, and you guys, I'm sure you can contest to it too, but like just, man, life just every day, like, you know, we stay so busy and it's just life takes us in so many different directions, but then, you know, it takes something to make you realize like, fuck man, I ain't reached out to Brian in so long. But I got to get better at that.
Hey dude, it's okay.
I hear you, and you mentioned something too, Shannon, like back in the day you talk about core groups. I mean, everybody, you know, the locker room's a locker room, and you know, you got each other's back, but you always have that core group, and you guys were that North Kakalaki group that just was, you guys had fun together, man. You could just see it. You feel it.
Yeah. Yeah. We, you know, that was the magic behind our group, I think, and why everybody was able to be, you know, successful in the business is because we were such a tight group from the beginning. I mean, it was me, Jeff, Joey Abs, Champagne, Marty Garner, you know, Joey Mercury, Christian York, Steve Corino, CW Anderson, Murray Hopper, Mike Maverick, Shane Helms. It's like, we just had this giant group of people. And like, when we rolled deep, and that was, you know, it was special. And then it carried on throughout, you know, obviously our years, whenever we were able to go into the much larger organizations. You know, even me and Shane, we went to WCW. So even down there, like we had our little group down there. We had Lodi, you know, Toad was down there at the time. And it was then Matt and them, obviously in WWE, and then you guys and, you know, y'all connected with Matt and them. And then whenever we all come together. But yeah, now I look back, man, it's like, you know, the friends that I was able to meet, you know, and it stems back because that's what made it fun, man. Like, you know, the business itself sucks,
right?
Plain and simple. Like the business part of pro wrestling is horrible. I hate it. I hate everything about it, but it's the relationships and that time in the ring that makes it special to me.
So Shannon, are all these guys you named, are they all North Carolina rooted that you named pretty much?
You know, Steve Corino and like Christian York and those guys were more Virginia guys and Northeast guys, but they were in North Carolina like all the time. And we, wherever we would connect and we would do road trips together, like whenever I signed with Music City Wrestling, whenever I was out there and we were doing the Bad Street Boys thing, it's like, you know, for a year, me and Shane would meet up with Joey and Christian, you know, somewhere at a point from Virginia to North Carolina, that middle point, so we could head to Nashville every weekend to film TV out there. So we would always just connect somewhere. So, you know, we kept the group pretty strong.
that list of names you just said, and if you were all together, would make me want to run the other direction if there was a problem. Because there's some there's some bad motherfuckers you just fucking named, man.
Well, dude, it was, you know, and like me, me and Joy Matthews, we were the youngest of the group. You know, like, you know, I was 13 years old, 14 years old. You know, and we were hitting the road, and you know, like Joey Abs was like my dad. Like nobody would mess with me because Jason would just murder him. He was the most talented guy in our group too, by the way. Like Joey Abs, you know, to me, he had everything, and he should have been the biggest star of the group. I think if he would have, you know, like things would have worked out better for him and the Mean Street Posse stuff, and just, you know, obviously there was other issues that come into play with that. But from a talent standpoint, Joy Abs was probably the most talented of our group and a legit crazy badass that would just murder people if he had to.
See, that's the funny part, Shannon, that this is how Brian and I differ. You see that group, Brian sees your group of guys and he says, I would run the other way. I would see that group of guys and say, I'm starting my own company. Because that's how talented that group was. That really was that much talent in that group.
You know, like we had, you know, we had Omega, that was our promotion. And, you know, it was short lived. We only had it for probably like a year or so, like really up and running, just because everybody got signed at that point. And one thing that, you know, it breaks my heart and it kind of hurts me because, you know, now that we're at the age we are and everybody's relatively, like, you know, healthy, like we should have brought Omega back whenever, you know, AEW first hit the scene and like, and the business started opening up from the monopoly of, you know, WWE, you know, once the business started opening up, it's like, I just feel like an opportunity was a miss for us to bring back Omega. And, you know, but it's hard because, you know, certain guys, they wanted to make the big money still as long as they could. And it's like, man, we should have paused for 2 years and put Omega on the map. And like Shane, he ran a few shows here and there. And like, there's been a couple of Omega shows, but there's never been nothing where that core group comes back together and truly like starts booking the right towns and the right arenas. And then bring in all of our friends that we've, you know, made over the years of the other companies too. But I feel like we've missed the opportunity with that, man. Cause like it was, Omega was kind of short lived and we made history with it, you know, like we created a brand back then that kind of revolutionized like cruiserweight wrestling. And, you know, where AEW is today, like if you look back at our Omega stuff, like a lot of those guys, and some of them said it in interviews, like, you know, that's the tapes they were watching was our Omega tapes. And because what we did is we took the Japanese style, the Mexican style and the American style and just threw it all into one pot. And that was just kind of like how we worked. So for the States in the late 90s, you know, in the United States, it was something new and fresh, you know, like you had ECW with the hardcore stuff. And we were that little company that just was doing some innovative stuff, but we just didn't have enough time to really get the legs under it to make it something, you know, much bigger.
Here's an interesting question, if you don't mind me asking this, because you talked about it. ECW was that hardcore style. You guys were kind of a blend of all the different styles. And at that time, when you guys were really doing your thing, WWE was struggling. They were.
Yeah.
And they kind of, the light bulb went on in somebody's head and said, hey, let's take all these styles incorporated into our programming and see how that translates to the audience. And then that's what developed into the Attitude Era. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely, man. I think, you know, Eric Bischoff was on the pulse too with the, you know, taking wrestling to more of that high flying style, you know, cause he started bringing in the luchadors, you know, like Ray and all those guys started coming in about the time that we were doing the Omega stuff. And, you know, not that, you know, like they copied us or anything like that. I think it was just timing for the business to kind of go in a different direction. And, you know, Eric, he's always been good at that, I think, is, you know, like putting something new and fresh on the program, you know, other than the big guys at that point. And, you know, like hence Rey Mysterio, which is obviously one of the biggest stars in the world today. You know, when he hit the scene, like that was just something new and fresh, you know, for Juventud and Psicosis. Then you had Eddie and Chris and all those guys down there doing that cruiserweight stuff that And they had already been doing it for years in Japan and in Mexico. So, like, the states just hadn't been introduced to it yet.
So, Shannon, you touched on this earlier. Do you think in 1999, when Three Count debuted in WCW, do you think that was the high point of your career?
Man, high point. Like, I don't know. Like, that definition of high point, like,
is that so broad?
Is that
hey, Shannon, is that a fucking bear behind you?
Oh, yeah, that's my pit bull. That's my, he's a micro bully. Yeah, he's a 100-pound micro bully.
That's a big bitch. Yeah. God damn, I thought it was a bear.
Yeah, that's funny. He goes, is that a bear, buddy? That's funny. But yeah, dude, three count was probably something that, out of all the stuff that I've done, like, it's stood the test of time. Like, it's something now, even today, like, people are like, dude, three count was amazing. And either you loved it or you hated it, but either way, it got a reaction. And, you know, like, Arn Anderson, he loved it. Jimmy Hart thought it was going to be the biggest babyface thing ever. Like, Jimmy, because Britney Spears and Justin Timberlake was so hot at that point, like, they were just hitting the scene. And Jimmy's like, hey, baby, like, you guys, you're going to sell out malls and you're going to do these concerts. And I'm, you know, in my head, I'm going, Jimmy, like, this is horrible. Like, I can't sing. Shane can't sing. Like, Evan can't sing. We can't dance. Like, what are you talking about? Like, these singers and stuff. But he had so much faith it was going to be this big babyface thing. But Arn seen something totally different. Arn's like, you guys could be the biggest heels in the company. And, you know, Arn would send us out 3-4 times a show to sing, to get that heel reaction, because, like, the girls liked us and the guys hated us. But, like, you know, for months and months, like, Arn would send us out first. It's or before the show started. After the second match, he'd send us out at intermission, and he'd send us out right before the main event. And, you know, then Sid Vicious would just walk down and the people would start popping and would think that they were applauding for us. And, you know, then we'd be like, oh, thank you guys. Like, we knew you would finally understand that Three Count's the greatest band in history. And, like, the people just kept getting louder and popping bigger. And then Sid would just stand behind us for a second, and then we'd turn around. He'd just, you know, bing us around and throw us out. And, like, the people loved it. And, you know, that was what the people loved to see that. And then, you know, whenever the Hardys and the Dudleys were doing their ladder matches, you know, because we were all friends, it was like Johnny Ace would come to us and they're like, hey, you know, we got to compete with these ladder matches. You guys got to be creative and do something different. And it's like, what else is there different to do?
Right.
So, like, you know, Matt and them, they hadn't really got into, like, building scaffolds and stuff with ladders. So that was the route that we tried to take, was to do more scaffold work with the ladders, to try to separate our different styles of ladder matches. Which, yeah, man, three count. Yeah, it was a high point in my career, because those ladder matches, like, they'll stand the test of time. Like, if you go back and watch the ladder matches we did with the Young Dragons, we had some pretty incredible matches.
Well, because I know you and know the guys that were with you, your group was multi-talented, but I thought it actually sucked. I could not stand it.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to lie. I can't sit here lying. Yeah. I couldn't stand it. Every time you came on TV, I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
But
then they did their job, Brian.
but that's the reaction, right? Cause, like, we could go out there and kill it in the ring. Like, you couldn't deny the fact that we could wrestle. Like, there was no denying that. Like, if you watch our matches and, like, you know, I'm not saying it for, I suck, but, like, Shane, you couldn't deny that Shane and Evan could wrestle.
Oh shit.
I'll say that. But yeah, like, the fact that the guys could go out there, rip it up, but their gimmicks sucked so bad, it was like, that's what got us so much heat. It was like, nobody wanted to see a boy band in wrestling, especially a shitty boy band.
Right.
And it was just like, yeah, like, you watch it and you hated it. But, like, today, when I go to do signings and stuff like that, that's what people love. They come up and they're like, dude, three count, like, I loved it, but I hated it. Like, I hated you guys, but I love to hate you guys. And, like, that's the mentality that behind everybody is, like, they hated to watch us, but they had to watch us because it was so bad, but so good. Like, it was weird. It had this weird effect on people.
That's actually true, though, Shannon, because I did not want to not like you guys because I knew how talented you guys were. I just thought the whole fucking gimmick was like, God damn, man.
Yeah, so who wrote this shit, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, dude, it was weird. So I think that's what makes it, you know, probably a high point and something that'll live on forever, is because people, it had that reaction on people. So you'll never forget it. Like if you watch wrestling, then whether you go, it was the shittiest thing ever, or it still caught the attention of somebody.
That's the beauty of this business though, Shannon, is that something like that, people will say, that's the high point of your career. Really? What about all the championships you won and that sort of thing? No, it's moments and memories that people remember. And that is something beautiful, because like Brian described it, you guys were so good and so talented in the ring. You almost wanted to say, screw these guys. They're really good. Why can't they just stop singing?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and that's the thing too, I think, like, you know, I never was a mark for like winning championships, because we all know like it's all a work. So it's like, there's some dude, you know, with a pencil that's writing who's going to be champion. It's not like, or, you know, we're doing jiu-jitsu or we're in a boxing match and it comes down to who's the best fighter. It's who's the best entertainer, man. And it's like, mm-hmm. you know, for me, creating moments and having stuff, whether it was just taking a single bump that would be remembered forever, which is, you know, I'd always try to do with the bigger guys that I wrestled, because I just felt like creating moments will last forever. Titles, like they won't be remembered, you know, like I think moments, created moments last longer than titles when it comes to history and legacies.
Hey, and there's another thing, or another way of looking at it, should I say, Shannon, there's bad gimmicks with bad wrestlers.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, like a Heidenreich. Let's just say, trying to call him out. I'm just saying,
right.
What was his name? Nathan Jones.
What about mm-hmm. Giant Gonzalez?
Or Nathan Jones.
Yeah.
All right. But you had a dumb gimmick, in my opinion. My opinion. This is my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you weren't bad wrestlers. So that's what made it kind of brilliant in a way, if you think about it, because you have three talented studs out there with this fucking dumb gimmick. So I'm thinking as you're talking, maybe I'm wrong, but it was crazy, because like I said, you guys were so talented and the gimmick was just, to me, dumb, but maybe somebody knew what they were talking about that was pushing that pencil you're talking about.
Well, it comes down to heat, man. Like, you know, Kevin Sullivan loved it. You know what I mean? Like Kevin.
Yeah, that's crazy to me too.
And that's why, because you're coming out of a time period where, like, you know, number one, like, giant guys are what wrestling was. Pro wrestling was about guys that were 300 pounds jacked. So you're moving into smaller guys. I was 145 pounds, 150 pounds. And, you know, that hadn't really been seen other than the luchadors. You know, like, you think about, like, X-Pac or Sean Waltman. He was probably the smallest guy in the business up to that point. You know, and he was 205 pounds. So it's like we were extremely small guys, but, you know, like coming out of an era where, you know, the Attitude Era was and the NWO, like these men's men, it just worked. It was something that it just created heat because of that, I think.
Was there a time when you finally transitioned over to WWF/WWE where there was this mindset where, oh, we're going to the land of the giants now? What does that mean for us? Because you, like you said, in WCW, you know, Eric did feature the luchador style and that sort of thing. So was there kind of like this conscious thing in the back of your head going, oh boy, how are they going to utilize us over here?
Yeah. Well, I'd already dealt with that earlier, you know, before I signed with WCW, because I tried to go to WWE like way earlier. Mm-hmm. And I would go up, Matt and Jeff would go up and do jobs. And there was a few times where I went up with them, and Tom Pritchard, you know, I gave him a tape one time, and he watched the tape. It was me wrestling Jeff. And like, Tom's like, dude, you're great in the ring. Like, you're talented. He goes, but you're way too small. Like, you'll never be here where the business is now because you're too small. And he was just honest with me. That's one thing I loved about Tom. And, you know, there's a few people in the business that's always been pretty honest with me. And, you know, he's like, I would look in other avenues, you know, until you can put some weight on or you get a little bigger. You know, because I was, you know, 15 years old, 16 years old and 145 pounds. So, I mean, he wasn't lying. It's not like he was just, you know, feeding me some BS. And so that's whenever my focus was on, okay, well, if that's the case, then if I can't go to WWE, I need to focus on WCW and see if I can do something there, or I need to focus on Japan or you know, like Mexico.
So Shannon, that statement that you just said, that where he said that you're just not big enough kind of thing, kind of like hits me to the heart. And I want to see what you think about this, but doesn't that make you, all right, so I'm gonna flip it on me. So if I went to try out for a referee and they said to me, you're just not big enough, you're skin and bones, you know, that would make me try and get on some shit and get big. Like, that would make me maybe do things I wouldn't want to really do because that's how bad I want my dream. Do you feel like that happens in this business a lot anymore, or you think that was in the past? I mean, how do you think that works?
I think it's different now. I mean, I think there's a difference between rejuvenation therapy now, this day and age, and the education that, you know, is out there, and I guess the science behind rejuvenation now. So like testosterone, like, you know, TRT therapy and all that's pretty common these days. I think, but back then it still wasn't like that outspoken thing. So for me, you know, like I did, I started taking some testosterone whenever I was 16 years old, just to, you know, start putting on more muscle and get bigger so I could make it in the industry. And I was willing to do that, whatever I had to do. And, you know, like over the years, man, like I'm a pro hormone, you know, pro anabolic guy too. So like, I believe that in the right dosages, and I believe that whenever it comes to testosterone therapy and, you know, like growth hormone, there's all these components to anabolics and these different therapies that can truly help people stay in shape for the rest of, you know, the rest of their lives. And it's like, I want to be the guy that is 70 years old and still being able to be active and hanging out with my grandkids doing fun stuff. And I did a lot of research that on that over the years too, and with doctors and all kinds of stuff. Like, I do think that back in the day, like, it was abused a lot. Like, a lot of anabolics were abused probably in the industry to have these massive bodies. And, you know, it's got a negative effect on people, but I think in the right ways that, you know, when you're having your blood work done and you got a doctor overlooking it and you're making sure that you're healthy, like, I think that anabolics and, you know, like certain anabolics can help you perform longer. It can help you, you know, maintain a body, whether you're wrestling or not wrestling. It's like, man, I want to be in the best shape I can be in because I want to enjoy life. You know, and I'm 44 years old now. And like, I do, you know, jiu-jitsu and I do all this other stuff, and I can go in there with a 21-year-old guy now and I have no injuries. And I think it's because I've chosen a path of rejuvenation and I've always maintained my blood work and all that stuff. So like, I'm pro hormones whenever it comes to that. So I'm probably the wrong guy to ask on that. And I've always been outspoken about like pro hormones. But I do think that there's people that abuse it and it can have a negative effect as well.
Well, like you said, Shannon, back in the day, it was, I hate to say it, a little prevalent to put it mildly. But the other problem, do you think along the same ways I do, not only was the use of anabolics back then a little bit of an issue, but also the fact that the guys were on such a tight schedule, that rugged, that going 250, 300 days a year on the road, just that grind added fuel to the fire, so to speak, for them to start taking that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's a mixture of things. I think that because I, you know, like, and I lived it, man, like I lived the party life. And so I think anabolics can take the bad rap for a lifestyle choice that causes more harm than good. Right. So you got three elements there. You got, you know, well, this guy takes anabolics or was taking anabolics, you know, and I'm talking about maybe somebody who passed away from whatever, and you know, everybody's like, oh yeah, well, he did a bunch of steroids. And but there's also, you know, like you said, the schedule back then, you know, you're on the road 300 days a year or whatever, and then you have the partying, you know, town to town, drinking beer, doing drugs, whatever the case is, whatever you were into, or you know, it's just that was the lifestyle back then. Especially, you know, it's a little different now, but back in the day, you know, like you partied, that's what you did. It was sex, drugs, rock and roll, just like a touring band, you know, and I don't think that's a secret. Like, everybody knows that was part of the industry at one point. And I think that those two elements had more harm than the anabolic part of it. So it's hard to point fingers at exactly what caused somebody, whether to lose their lives or to be in bad health, whenever you got all these negative elements coming together at one time. And it's like, you know, we just didn't take care of ourselves. And like, that's what it came down to. Back in those days, it was you eat, breathe, sleep, pro wrestling, and self-care just wasn't part of the conversation.
Like a bad mixture, a bad cocktail.
Yeah.
So, Shannon, you touched on something I wanted to get into in our third count. And I want to go back to this because there's something I wanted to break down. So with that being said, what I want to do is we're going to head to our third count, which I know you listen to the show each and every week. So I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. Hint, hint, wink, wink. but what we're going to do is we're going to head to our third count. When we come back, we're going to have fan questions. We're going to have Jimmy questions. We're going to have RJ questions and Brian questions, and then get you out of here to your busy life. But we're going to do that when we come back with our third count.
This is your three count.
And it wouldn't be our third count without one of the members of three count, Mr. Shannon Moore. Shannon, man, so great to have you here. And, you know, just talk shop. You know, that's what we're here about. We're here to have some fun, talk shop about your career and just life in general, man. You know, one of the names that we've been talking about since we started here has been Matt Hardy. When you got there, we talked about three count. We talked about you getting there with the company, working with the bigger guys, but Matt Hart version one, that was some of the best stuff I've ever seen. And it was one of those things, like you said, about three count. It's either you liked it or you didn't like it. There was really no in between. First and foremost, was that one of like Matt's ideas to, you know, have you partner with him or be associated with his little entourage, I guess you could say?
Before you answer that, Shannon, this is something you'll understand very much. Just listen up. The Wonder.
You gotta say softball, it right, RJ.
Softball. But I knew Brian was gonna go there, so I'm lobbing these softballs to him.
Yeah. That's funny. Yeah, man. You know, that time period, you know, Matt, like, he was trying to just extend his whole the Mattitude thing and trying to add some depth to it. And it was kind of like a real life thing, you know, like, you know, I was the third brother. Everybody thought I was the third Hardy, you know, like since we started, like, because we were inseparable. And, you know, now that we're all in WWE, you know, like, our fan bases knew that we were a tight group, and most people did. Most people thought that I was just the third Hardy. And I think being able to do that and for us to actually put that on TV, it was real, because that's kind of who we were, you know. Me and Jeff, like, we've always been best friends, like, since, cause we went to school together. And then, you know, Matt was the older brother who, you know, like, whenever me and Jeff were hanging out in school, like, Matt was attempting to go to college for a year, and like, he was just the older brother. But the fact that we got to bring that reality behind just our relationship, as far as us being friends and stuff, to, you know, like, multiply it a little bit and then put it on TV and kind of run with it, like, it was fun, man. And I think, you know, whenever we talk about moments, it's like, those are the moments that constantly come up on my social media feeds. You know, there's things that come up. It's either three count, it's, you know, the version one stuff. Whenever I was his MF or his Mattitude follower. And then, you know, like, whenever Crash became my moron, you know, Crash was just kind of screwing stuff up for me. So it was like, you know, since Matt had his MF, I thought that I need a, you know, my follower. So Crash Holly became my follower, which was a moron. And like, it was, yeah, so like, we got to play with it a little bit, you know, and like, so, you know, Shannon, we ran with it for a while.
Shannon, yeah, real quick, I don't mean to cut you off, but all right, so it took me actually years of convincing that you were not a Hardy, first of all. I'm being dead serious. Secondly, how was it like, man, going to high school with Jeff Hardy? Like, how was it like? Did the people in school know you guys were, like, training to for your craft, for your future? Like, did these people in school know that y'all were like crazy as fuck and doing dumb shit that they wouldn't dare to do? Like, how was this? Yeah. How did this work?
Dude, if you would have went to school with us, you would have thought we were out of our minds. You know, Jeff was a senior and I was a freshman, and you know, like we would run shows at the fairs and locally, so everybody knew what we did. All the teachers supported it. You know, our principal supported it. You know, our FFA, like I was in Future Farmers of America.
No way.
Like that was just because, like, dude, I wasn't planning on going to college. Like, for some reason inside of me, I knew that wrestling was going to be what I did for the rest of my life. I was like, man, I'm just going to be a wrestler and I'm accepting nothing else. So, like, I set myself up for either to quit school or, you know, they were gonna have to deal with it and just get me through and just let me graduate. And Roger Coble, he was our FFA teacher. Like, he would come to the shows, he would take pictures, he'd send them into magazines. But dude, we'd wear tights to school, man. Like, we'd wear,
what?
Yeah, we'd wear tights, we'd wear our hip packs and high tanks. So people, yeah, they thought that we were just completely out of our mind. And you know, but this is also like our high school was this crazy high school. Like, we were, you know, this redneck high. I mean, people traded shotguns in the hallway. You know what I mean?
My God.
Like, people would have their shotguns in the locker. Like, you know, they'll trade shotguns. There'd be shotguns in the back of the trucks and all that stuff. So, like, it was just a different time. But if you went to high school with us, you knew that we were crazy. And one thing that I look back and, like, I always wonder about is, like, I was number one seed in tennis, and you know, the girl that I played tennis with that I actually beat for that spot in eighth grade, she's a tennis pro today. Her name's Carla Simpson. And yeah, so like we were, and Jeff was great at baseball, so like there were these other sports. And I think, like, whenever it comes to tennis, like, I just wonder sometimes, like, man, what would happen if I would have just went the tennis route? Like, you know, would I have ended up a pro tennis player? Or, you know, but like, I couldn't compete in no high school sports because I was considered a pro athlete, and the athletic commission wouldn't let me or Jeff like wrestle there. Like, we couldn't compete and stuff because we had been paid and we were on TV already, on national TV. So,
you know,
it was a weird time, man. And like my senior year, you know, like Lodi and like all the older guys, like, would try to rush me back. Like, we'd be in Asheville doing shows for the weekend and they'll try to get me back so I wouldn't miss school on Monday morning. Like, they'll drive all night and let me sleep in the back seat. But dude, like my senior year, I think I missed like 75 days of school or something.
So what would Matt do? Do a swanton to first base on a course?
yeah. Now, Jeff was a home run, and he could nail homers, man. He was a good baseball player. You know, like, he was good at it. And just wrestling kind of consumed us. And, you know, we ran the gimmick even in high school. Like, we wore hip packs and tights in high school and high techs, you know, like, and our, you know, they let us do whatever, man. Like, they would let us go on the road, let us wrestle. The principal supported us. And like, I think my senior paper was on Hulk Hogan. And the reason that I chose that's because, you know, even then my carny brain, right? So I'd already been in the business long enough to understand all this carny shit and like how to work people. And I was like, hey, they'll never be able to fact check my paper if I write it on Hogan, because they'll never be able to get a hold of Hogan. He'll never tell them whether it's true or not.
Brother.
So I wrote this big paper on Hogan, and like it was funny, man, like just how it happened. And I had these little, you know, like paragraphs in there where Hogan would talk about certain things. And but yeah, it was cool, man.
Wow.
It was complete work. I completely worked my whole senior paper.
Shannon, how old were you when you did your first real deal house show or blah, blah, like you were in the ring working?
God, 13, I think. 12.
How the fuck did you get away with that? How?
It was I mean, I started training whenever I was 10 or 11.
You weren't legal age.
Yeah, I'd run in and wrestle, dude, run out if I had to. Like, there was times where I got snuck in strip clubs because I wasn't old enough to get in. You know, like, I'd go in, like, they'd get me through the front door, I'd wrestle, and then have to go back to the car, sit in the car the rest of the show. You know, just stuff like that. Like, it was South Carolina. I don't even know if I can get a license in South Carolina anymore. I've never had one other than WWE. And the last time I went to South Carolina, there was an issue with my license. And I don't know if it's because whenever I was so young, like I was wrestling there and the athletic commission might put me on this blacklist or whatever.
I would say that'd be a problem.
Yeah. The last time I went for an indie show in South Carolina that the athletic commission showed up for, you know, they tried to cause problems for me. And then I just went out to the ring and I cut a promo on the athletic commission. So I think now probably they probably really hate me.
Oh my God. Is that still a thing? Are the athletic commission still a problem with pro wrestling still to this day? Like I've been away from it for so long, so I don't know, especially up here in Canada. We used to have commission referees and everybody, the boys used to go, oh geez, here we go again.
Yeah.
Did you ever run into that where you have to have a commission referee and the guy was just had no clue?
Dude, I don't deal with hassles now, so I can't answer that question. Like if I can't go in somewhere and just go wrestle and then do my thing and leave, it's like, I don't want a part of it. I don't want to deal with an athletic commission today. I don't want to deal with none of that stuff. Yeah. But this was probably 7-8 years ago whenever somebody tried to book me in South Carolina and you know, then the athletic commission, they wanted me to get a physical and all that stuff. I'm like, yeah, I'm not doing that. I'm not.
Right.
Not going to get in a physical and all spending money. It's like, if the promoter wants me to do it, then you need to set it up when I get there and I'll come in and wrestle for you. But I just, I just can't, I just don't have that energy no more, man, to put into it. It's like, it's not that I don't love the business. I love the time in the ring. I love the people in the business or my boys and all that stuff. But I have no time for these certain promoters that think they're big shots and they're trying to, you know, be Vince McMahon and Tony Khan these days, that just say that they want to bring you in, but then you get there and I'll get on a plane, just go home before I have to deal with some BS.
That's a beauty right now for you, because you just do your own schedule right now. You just pick and choose whatever you want to work and just cool.
Yeah, right? It comes down to, it's a business for me, and I didn't treat it like a business. I wish I would have. I treated wrestling based off my passion and love for the business for so long. And it took me, you know, to about 2017 to realize. And dude, Rikishi tried to tell me, and there's a lot of guys that try to tell me, like, Shannon, you have to treat this as a business only. You can't treat this based off of your passion and love for the industry. If you do, you're going to get hurt. Number one, emotionally hurt, you're not going to do what's best for your family. You're going to make decisions based off of your passion. And they're so right. And, you know, today that's how I look at it. Like, pro wrestling's a business for me. If it doesn't, you know, if it's not going to benefit me and my family financially, I don't want to be part of it. I don't want to do it. I don't have to, because, you know, I paid my dues and I'm not. So, you know, certain promoters will call me and, you know, they're like, hey, what's your rate? And it's here's the number. And this is for my time in the ring and also the time that I have to take off of my everyday schedule. And I have to leave my family and I have to deal with the airports and I have to deal with all this other nonsense. And it's like, you know, and then they want to argue if your rate's too high or not. And it's like, dude, I have a rate that I feel like it's best for both parties. And if you don't think so, that's fine. Like, we don't have to work together. but if you want me to come in, then it's going to be X amount of dollars for me to come in, because it's 2 days, however you want to chalk it up, it's 2 days of my time. If you're up at 5 a.m. and the payments for that time in the ring, but you got all this extra BS that comes into it. And I don't think, a lot of these promoters that haven't promoted for, in a long time or don't understand the business, they just think that everybody's still supposed to just love this business so much that, or if you've been away from one of the major organizations, you should work for peanuts. And it's like, no, dude, that's not how it works.
No.
So Shannon, we talked about your high school where you guys had shotguns in the back of your truck. You wore your gimmicks to school. your wrestling gimmicks. We've talked about the you working as a 13-year-old child. So this goes to my panel, which is Jimmy and RJ. Can you imagine the conversations I've had with Shannon Moore through my years of hanging out and after shows?
Pretty interesting.
Pretty fucking interesting. And I can tell you right now, these are new ones. But
yeah. See, these are only little tidbits you can find on Reffing It Up.
Right.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Reffing It Up.
Yeah.
RJ, let's get to a couple fan questions, man.
All right, we got you briefly, you know, hit and miss. You touched on this a little bit, Shannon, but Jeremy Case just wants to know the importance, and if you could explain it, the importance of making the most out of anything that you're given gimmick-wise. You know, you talked about three count, you know, version one with Matt Hardy. We didn't really talk about your stuff in TNA, but even any of that, just the importance of making the best out of anything that the office comes to you with.
Yeah. You know, that's a big thing. And like, I hear a lot of people, you know, today struggle with that because everybody wants to be world champion. Everybody wants to be the top guy, and nobody, I'm not going to say nobody, like something that I did and I feel like I was really good at, and it got me longevity in my career, was knowing your role on the roster, right? Knowing your role on the show, you know, and Arn, you know, like he taught me a lot too. Like, man, I got a lot from Arn because, you know, like, that's what it is, man. Like, it's the entertainment industry. And, you know, in a movie, like, there's not going to be a top star. There's not going to be 20 top stars in the movie. It's like, it takes a group of people to make a good movie. And it's the same with wrestling, man. To make a good wrestling show, like, there's somebody that night that's not going to get the big push. There's somebody that night that's just going to go out and do a job. There's somebody. So, like, I think for me, no matter what was given to me, and it's like, I was the go-to guy for a long time too, for the bigger guys, like your Nathan Jones, your Brock Lesnar's, your Heidenreich's, your, you know, your, like me and Brock, like I got to do so much cool creative stuff with Brock for a while, just because I would creatively come up with ways to make the giant look even bigger than what they are. It's like, you know, I don't have to make Brock Lesnar look like a beast. He looks like a beast, but I could use my creativity and my athletic ability to make him look even better. And that's the way it was with, you know, the great Khali. Like, if you go back and you look at some of these matches that I did with some of those guys that I just named, and there's going to be moments in those matches where you're going to see something really creative. Like, it might be one bump, but that one bump would get me over more than them out there just killing me. In a lot of ways, like that, I feel like that gave me longevity in my career. And there were specific times too where it saved my job. Like, I was on the cutting, I was on the chopping block one time, and, you know, Terry Taylor, I love Terry Taylor. Terry Taylor's treated me so good throughout my entire career and been super honest with me. You know, and I don't know if everybody feels that way, but for me personally, Terry Taylor come to me one time and he's like, "Hey Shannon, I'm just letting you know, you're getting ready to be fired. You better do something tonight that makes Vince go like, holy shit, we need to keep him." And that's the night that I got I had to wrestle Brock that night, and I took two bumps for Brock that night. And it's one of the times that I got a standing ovation by Vince coming back through, and it was a complete, you know, 2 minute just annihilation. But I was able to creatively take some bumps for Brock and work for Brock that night that grabbed Vince's attention to the point of when I walked back through, you know, I got a standing ovation by Vince, and I kept my job for three more years. So it was, you know, it was those moments, man. Like, they can make or break you. And I think today, you hear a lot of guys that, you know, they get all boo-boo faced if they're not, you know, going out there and winning the match, or, you know, not getting as much as they think they should get. And it's like, everybody's egos, man, like, are way too big. And, you know, like, egos ruin people's career. And I've seen it happen so much. And even me, and I'm not perfect, man. There was times in my career where I wanted more and I wanted more, and I had a bad attitude. And, you know, like, it probably didn't sit well with certain people, but I tried to take every moment that I was given, whether it was on TV, and at least get a moment out of it, whether it was me taking a bump for somebody that everybody would remember, or, you know, like if it was in my favor, then, you know, like just going out there and killing it and having a good solid match.
So, Shannon, here's the thing. You said something about, you know, chopping block, had to do something for Vince, you know, to see differently. Do you feel like that was just old school mentality at that point in time? In other words, now they had the new regime, and I'm sure now you still watch current wrestling. I'm assuming, correct?
Dude, I haven't watched a show in probably 5 years, honestly.
Really?
What I see on Twitter is about all I see. I'm still friends with some of the guys out there, but like, I don't watch TV. I never have time to sit in front of my TV and watch, especially 3 hours of wrestling. But I try to keep up with as much as possible just on social media, but I haven't watched a complete show or no more than 10 minutes of a show probably in year. It's been years.
Well, you're too busy shooting shotguns and running around in your wrestling gear.
at the local theater.
Well, then I guess you wouldn't know the answer to this, or you wouldn't have a comment maybe, but it was the new regime is there. Okay. In WWE. Yeah. And if you're watching online, obviously through social media, you're going to have an idea what I'm talking about. The statements that have been made from guys that have come back, such as Bully Ray, who came back at WrestleMania, did a ref spot, said it was totally different. Everybody was much looser. Everybody's happier. They're not so, as me and you lived under that, you get the TV and you feel like everybody's coming to attack you. That's the way I felt. I don't know if you felt that way. I can't put words in your mouth. House shows were fine for me, but my WWE years were fucking awful. They were awful. Yeah. I felt attacked. I felt like everything I did was micromanaged. I feel like it was just awful. Do you see things differently for what's going on now that Vince McMahon is gone and about to go underneath the fucking prison?
I think it has changed for the better. I think that Triple H is doing a good job right now. Just opening the product up and getting it back to the to a younger, like cooler, hipper audience. Yeah. I feel like we're finally tapping into that again, like because people are starting to talk about wrestling again. It needed a facelift, man. I think that, you know, wrestling in general needed a facelift. And I think with TKO, you know, with the buyout, I think that's what's going to spark that facelift is that. And I think with Hunter in control right now, I think that it adds a really good, fresh element because, you know, like he does, he wants to create new stars, new characters. And I think he does have the bigger picture whenever it comes to the way that he's handling creative. You know, I still talk, like I said, I talk to some guys that, you know, isn't on TV now, but they'll be back on TV soon. And, you know, whenever I hear them talk about stuff, man, like it sounds like they're more in tune with the talent now, like as far as getting creative ideas, you know, like, hey, what do you feel like is going to work for you whenever we bring you back on TV? Just some of the conversations are different. And I think that is, there's been a changing of the guard. You know, Johnny Ace, I feel like, you know, for that period, Johnny Ace was one of the, you know, he bullied people, man. Like it was, you know, and I hate to say that because, you know, I thought at one point, like me and Johnny were in a good place, but, you know, he had did things to me that made my career and my family suffer. And it sucked, man, because like, you know, these people have control of your careers. And you're putting everything into it. And I feel like back then, whenever there were certain people in control of my career, like I didn't have job security. It's like you said, like I walked in and I was scared I was going to be fired every day. You know, and I feel like now, like the guys, they feel like they have more job security and they have more control over, you know, their careers and their legacies, man. Like, you know, I didn't know if my legacy was going to end one day to the next. You know, there was times when me and Jimmy Wang Yang, we were told we were going to win the tag team titles on Tuesday, and then I got fired on Friday. And it's like, what?
Yeah.
Like, how did I get fired whenever we're supposed to win the tag titles on Tuesday? You know, and like, that was Johnny Ace's decision back then. And, you know, like, I just, I feel like when bad people are doing things based off of ego and bad motives, the only people that suffer is the guys that, you know, like us, that have passion for the business and, you know, the love for the business and what we do, man. And I hope that that's not the case, you know, ever again in the industry.
Well, Shannon, well, I'll tell you this, Jimmy, you're next. I promise.
No, cool. No, that's cool.
I'll just say this, Shannon, and I mean this with all my heart. I am exactly how you are. I felt that I was in a good place with Johnny, but I'm going to tell you right now, through the years that transpired before I left WWE, I can tell you right now, he's the biggest fucking piece of shit I will ever fucking know. He is not only shit on my father, the legacy of the Hebner family, but he's the biggest fucking piece of shit. And I'll say that on this show, you brought him up at least twice, and I cringed every time.
Yeah.
He went into business for fuck himself, and he treated people like you, who he was able to bait in as a friend. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he was all about business and himself.
Yeah.
And we thought otherwise, and he did a good job of convincing of this. So hopefully whenever things said done, he's out selling vacuums or some shit that he can convince everybody else to buy, because I'm not buying this shit ever again. And once again, I'll leave it alone. It just came up. I'm sorry. It hits a spot for me, but fuck Johnny Ace.
Yeah. Now he did, you know, like he just, his motives were wrong, man. And it's like, one thing I don't deal with is like negativity these days. And it's like, I would love to have a conversation with him one day. And I'd like to sit down and just like, especially now, cause like, you know, and I wouldn't be angry. I'd like to have a conversation with him and let him know like how he affected me at certain points in my career in a negative way. And, you know, like I got punished by him whenever, long story short, I was in TNA and I wasn't under contract and I was doing main event stuff with AJ. And then, you know, like I made a phone call to Vince, his cell phone. And I was like, hey, Vince, like I'm not under contract. I'm in TNA. I'm doing some good stuff. And I'd sent like, you know, some pictures of my new character and stuff with Julie, which was my ex-wife. And I was like, Julie's got some pictures. If, you know, like she's going to give them to you, like check them out. So I kind of, you know, like Johnny took it as me going over his head to get my job back. Cause Vince was like, okay, yeah, let's, you know, like hire him back. I like what he's doing after he's seen the pictures and stuff. So that night Johnny calls me, he's like, hey kid, we're going to bring you back. But then like, I came back and I had my first match with CW Anderson. It was the ECW show that we did in New York at the, what was the ball? Hammerstein. Yeah. And I wrestled CW Anderson, man. And I felt bad, not for me. I felt bad for CW because CW is once again, one of the North Carolina boys. And, you know, it was his shot to do this ECW show. And Johnny was on headset and we were out there and he kept turning me babyface and heel. He's like, he would send word to the referee, like, hey, tell Shannon to turn heel, tell him to turn babyface. And he did it like 10 times to the point where it just fucked the match up. Then, yeah. So I got to the back and it was like, I was like, Johnny, that was, you know, like that was punishment. I get it. And it was just like, no, kid, I just wanted to see if you could do it. And it's like, no, you didn't, dude. You're just being a bully. So like that let me know just kind of what his character is all about. And you know, from then on it was just, you know, it was what it was. Like he's just bad people, but karma's a bitch. And you know, like, hey, it is what it is. Like karma will get you.
Yeah I love hearing, you know what I love hearing, and I don't blame you, Brian, for being as hot as you are about the situation. I know you don't want to leave it alone, and that's cool, but that Shannon said that, you know what, he's let it go by. He just want to know, you know, what was his mindset? What was he thinking? And here's what you did to me.
I know what his mindset was.
I do too. But at the same time, like Shannon said, you know, I'm of that, you know, like you said, karma is a bitch and bites you in the ass when it's your time.
Yeah, it does, man. And I've seen it to a lot of people, and it's like I'm at a different place in my life now, and I just don't have time for negative people. And I'll continue to try to help people and be me and try to be the best version of me. And I don't
Awesome.
have to have people like that in my life anymore.
Well,
That's
Shannon,
awesome.
me and you have had some offline conversations and stuff, and I want to bring this up because I'm so very proud of you, and I want you to touch on it however you want. This is up to you. You've battled through some demons, and I don't mean in the ring. Do you want to touch on any of that and catch some listeners up to view, I guess, and tell us where you're at now and what you're doing.
Yeah, man. So, throughout my career, I was introduced to pain pills and the whole deal, just, trying to maintain at the beginning, like these little injuries and nagging injuries. And then it turned into, I never knew what physical addiction was. So then it turned into physical addiction, later on in my career. At the time, nobody knew that I had an issue with drugs, or opiates at that point, or pills, however you want to chalk it up. Just because, back then, man, like it was common that, we take certain medications, or, a lot of us. But there was a point to where, it become physical addiction, and, I become dependent on these things, man, and I had to take them on a daily basis just to feel normal. And I wasn't educated on what addiction was. Like, I knew that, we had lost a lot of wrestlers to addiction. I'd seen people that were supposedly drug addicts. I had family members that were supposedly drug addicts, but I wasn't educated on it. And then there was a point where, I had the bright idea. My TNA contract was up. I was like, man, I'm gonna take about 2 years off. And it was the worst thing I could have done, because like my dependency on, like prescription pills just got worse and worse and worse and worse. Because I was just sitting home. I was bored. I was just, I was bored. I didn't have no purpose. I thought I was just gonna take this 2 years, and I had no plan of why I was gonna take 2 years off or not do anything. And it got worse and worse and worse. And then the next thing I couldn't get enough prescriptions. So like I was having to buy stuff off the street, and then the price of this stuff like went through the roof, and then I couldn't afford it anymore. And then I jumped to heroin, man. I started shooting heroin and fentanyl. It was right when fentanyl hit the scene, and
Damn.
heroin was mi it was mixed with
Wow.
fentanyl. And I started shooting heroin, and it just took control of my life. The next thing like I had lost everything to, I traded it for my drug use. I had no purpose. I didn't care about nothing, man. Like, my marriage was in the dumps. I had commercial real estate. I had to get rid of it. I had a couple of houses. I had the cars, and I had everything that I'd built over the years, man. And it vanished in a period of, two years. So I was at my bottom, man. Like, I was in a place where I was almost, homeless. Cash. Sorry, guys. That's
No,
my
you're good.
bear. Yeah, he's yeah,
That's
so
a big bet's a big bitch.
that's my bear. So yeah, I was at a point, man, where I was at my bottom, and I just, I didn't know how to get out of it, because like I was in a really dark place at that point. And long story short, man, like I could sit here, my if I told you in detail of everything that happened over that period of time, we'd be here all night. But I finally ended up, I was at a point where I knew I was either going to go to jail that week. I was either going to be dead that week, because I wanted to kill myself, because I didn't know how to escape that cycle. Or, like there was a last ditch effort for me. Brian James, Road Dog, he was in recovery at that point. And, like I'd seen him work his way up in WWE and get into the office, sober, but he was still Road Dog. And I didn't understand what recovery was. I didn't understand what addiction was. But I knew Brian had did something to change his life for the better, and that he had got purpose back, and that like he was running strong. So I was heading to Florida to do something really bad, to pretty much put an end to it, whichever way it went, and to my life. And I made a phone call to Brian that day just to tell him thank you. Like, hey, dude, I just want to say thanks. And then, well, I reached out. Well, let me back phrase. I reached out to him on Twitter, right? And I was like, hey, dude, like, you know, I need help. You know, like, you know, I'm thinking of doing some bad stuff. And I just want to say thank you. I don't know what to do. And Brian, and he'll tell you, like, if you ever talk to Brian James, like, he'll tell you, he never looked at Twitter at the time. He's like, dude, for some reason, I was on my way to TV that day, and I just happened to go into my Twitter messages, and I seen that message. And he responded immediately, and he's like, Shannon, he's like, there is help. You know, like, Brian, he's a, you know, he's a big, you know, Christian guy, and like, which I am too, man. Like, God's been good to me. Now that I'm aware of what God does in my life, at the time I didn't, but he's like, hey man, like, you know, God wants you to be happy. And that's what I said. I was like, dude, I just want to be happy again. I'm just not happy. I don't want to be alive anymore. Right. So long story short, like, you know, WWE, they have a wellness program that has saved a lot of lives. And Brian hooked me up with, the guy that runs their treatment program, basically, that gets people into treatment. And, you know, Brian's like, hey, Shannon needs help. And, you know, WWE has that program that'll send people to treatment that'll help people. And WWE put me in treatment. They had me in treatment in 24 hours. You know, I went there for 30 days, and I went there thinking that I was going to stay for 30 days. I put a deadline on. I was like, oh, I'll go for 30 days.
So Shannon, you in 24 hours, you went to rehab?
Yeah, WWE had me in treatment in 24 hours.
Wow.
From the time that I called them.
And you were on your way to and you were on your way to Florida.
So I owned a house in Florida, and I'm not gonna go into detail because I don't, you know, like, I was on my way to do something really horrible. That would either end me up in jail or, you know, killing myself or, you know, then I reach out to Brian as like that last ditch effort, that last, I need help. But like, subconsciously, like, that was my cry for help, I think. So he hooked me up with, you know, with Bob, who runs that specific program. They had me in treatment 24 hours. Long story short, man, I went in, I was there for about 2 weeks, and I realized, like, I had a lot of trauma, man, like, from my childhood, that was coming back to play, you know, like, play a big part in my drug use. I got educated on what it was that I was battling. You know, I didn't know what alcoholism was. I didn't know what drug addiction was. And I didn't know that it's more than just drinking or using. Like, there's a reason that we drink or use. There's a root of the problem. Right. And I didn't know that, man. And I started getting educated on it, and I realized, like, I needed to stay longer. So I stayed in treatment for, you know, several months, and I wanted to get my life back on track. And I was willing to do whatever I had to do to get it back on track. So long story short, man, after treatment, you know, I was like, man, this process is magic. And, you know, there's other guys in the industry that I felt like that maybe I could share my experience, strength, and hope with, and hopefully help them too. So the treatment center that I went through, like, they allowed me to work with other athletes that would come in. And I was just doing service work at that point. And then I kind of had this natural, you know, like, knack for it. And I was able to, you know, relate to a lot of the doctors and the lawyers, because it was a professional treatment center where, like, doctors, lawyers, pro athletes would come into. And it just ended up something that, you know, it became my passion at that point. And I kind of put wrestling on the back burner. And then, you know, the treatment center ended up offering me a job, you know, to work there. And then, you know, that treatment center ended up closing down. And then the bigger treatment center, and it's called Riverside Recovery of Tampa. It's, you know, we're the largest treatment center in Tampa. But, you know, they brought me in. They're like, hey, dude, like, you're working with pro athletes. Why don't you come in and just run our pro athlete program? So I did that. And then, you know, now, like, I get to work with all pro athletes and veterans that come in.
That's amazing. That's absolutely
So that's.
amazing. And you talked about, oh, sorry to cut you off, John, because hearing that is so incredible, because we talk about karma and stuff like that, and everybody has a purpose in their lives and in life in general. And it's just up to each individual to find that purpose. And you found yours. And I think that's an incredible story. That's a beautiful story, my friend, and continued recovery as well, because it's an ongoing battle, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, man, I didn't know that there was help available and that, that it works. And now we've got a core group of guys that's actually been through the process. And, these guys like that are in recovery today that, I work with other pro athletes that are out there. It's like, man, that's one thing like I like to do now is just spread the word, like, especially through the wrestling industry, man, is like, man, if you're struggling with any kind of drug addiction, alcohol, or mental health, it's like get a hold of me. And we've got to be more vocal to help people now because it's not the black sheep thing. Like before, we couldn't speak on it if we were with the major companies because we were scared we'll get, punished for it. But it's not like that today. Like, WWE's super supportive of helping talent with these issues today and where they're at today. And and I'm sure like AEW or TNA, like if there's any of these companies that have somebody there now, like if we hear about these guys or if there's guys that it's like, I just want them to contact me because it's not a bad thing anymore. Like there's help on the other side of this. And the quicker you can get over it and you can work through it, man, like it's just it benefits us because I'd be dead today, like without like Brian getting me into treatment. And there's other guys that have been through the process that would tell you the same thing. So like it's awesome that WWE has a program like that. That's it's definitely saving lives. And that's one thing that I have to say about WWE saved my life whenever it comes to my addiction.
Incredible.
That's actually amazing, Shannon. And the only thing I want to just say, your life prior to being a wrestling superstar is beyond us. We don't know that. We don't know your childhood. We don't know your parents. We don't know what happened. We don't need to know what happened. I'm not asking that. But beyond that, what people don't understand, though, why it's so common, I guess, for a guy like you, who basically, in all honesty, was fighting from the bottom and trying to get to the top as best he could. You're traveling so many days a year. You're living out of a suitcase. You're dragging a suitcase. You're sleeping in not your bed. You're taking bump after bump after bump after bump. And if the listeners don't understand, it hurts and it weighs on you. And you're fighting for a spot and you're fighting to not miss time because you can't do it. If you do it, you lose it. And it's an addictive sport. It is. And for you to just say what you've said, like, dude, I almost want to come to tears. Because I care so much about this business and I care so much about you. And when I told you and talked to you the other day that I was so proud of you, I mean that with all my heart, man. I was with you through your bad times, in all honesty. We hung out through your bad times. I wasn't doing the things that you were doing, but I was also doing some other things that you were doing. So, but it's amazing to see you and look at you right now and to see you the way you are now. I can see the focus in your eyes. You're not the same guy anymore. You're the better guy. You're the better version of Shannon Moore. And dude, I'm so super proud of you. I really am, man. And you're probably thinking, well, how the fuck are you super proud of me? And you're drinking a beer. Yeah. Well, you know what? There it is. Why I drink. I mean,
No,
why I drink, I mean, I, why I drink, I have no idea.
but that's the difference in me and you, man. Like, not everybody's an alcoholic or a drug addict. Like some people, you know, they don't have to use every day and they don't have to drink every day just to feel normal. But, you know, for a true alcoholic, it's like, you know, and that's where we have to be honest with ourselves. And that's where I had to get to that point where I was like, dude, what, you're a drug addict, man. Like, you got to do something about this you're going to end up dead or in jail this week. And, you know, that was the case. And like now seeing, you know, I get to help people now, like get educated on it, come in, change their lives and get their families back. And like, there's nothing like that. There's nothing like seeing somebody on the verge of death come in, completely change in a period of 30, 60 days, and then their families reunite, come back together. And it's a completely different person. You know, it's amazing. So, you know, for me, like, and to be able to help some of the guys now, you know, I work with a lot of the, you know, I've worked with a lot of the boys, man, over the past years. And that's the love that I have for this, is being able to help my brothers.
Yep. I agree, man.
That's amazing.
Well, Shannon, we have reached a portion of our show that I hate, and that's we got to let you go. But I do want you to take this time, and you can have all the time you want to put out anything you want to put out, your social medias, anything you want to do, your phone numbers, anything. Just this is you now, right now.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, man. Like the biggest thing that, you know, like I promote today is like, obviously if you want to book me, like, you know, you can go to my Facebook or my Twitter at Shannon Brand, or, you know, Shannon Moore on Facebook, or gaschambertattoo@gmail.com is my email if you want to contact me. But like, dude, if there's anybody struggling or anybody listening to this that's struggling, or, you know, that doesn't know if they're an alcoholic or an addict, or, you know, is scared to ask for help or doesn't know how to get help, it's like, reach out to me, man. Like, you know, shoot me an email, you know, gaschambertattoo@gmail.com. Like, let me help you. Let me help you get better. Just because, like, we don't deserve to stay in that rat race of addiction or, you know, alcoholism. So that's my passion today. My passion is to help, you know, I want people to get their lives back and, you know, and not die, man, because it's life or death. And it's like, you know, whether you're a drug addict or an alcoholic, it's as, you know, heroin addict or an alcoholic, it's as equally the same disease that you're fighting. And ultimately, they both lead to death. It's just, it might take you a little longer going one direction. So, you know, whatever I can do to help people, please contact me.
Awesome.
That's amazing. I hope people who reached out, and then, like I said, I don't know. I speak for everybody here, man. We love hearing that from you, that you conquered those for now. And we know that your battle will continue and you will be successful. And thank God for that.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate you having me on.
Shannon, I've hung out with you in your dark days, and I will take none of that back. I will tell you that. But we had fun.
There's some good stories that come out of it. But I'm glad to be where I'm at today. Yeah.
Absolutely. And you know what? I'm glad you're where you're at today, because brother, I love you and I think you know that. And I want to hang out with you now.
Let's do it, man. Let's get together. Come on down to Tampa, man. I got a spare bedroom.
I want to jump there in that pool. I want to jump in that pool with that bear.
Yeah, you can jump in the pool with Russell the bear.
There you go. Good.
Yeah. All you guys got a room here, man, anytime you need it.
Absolutely.
Appreciate
buddy.
It. Thank you,
Well, we love you, man. And thank you so much for joining the show. And I'll be in touch with you, and I hope you're in touch with me.
All right. Love you guys. Y'all have a good night.
Take care.
You are tuned to Ruffin It Up!
Wow, guys. I think I can honestly say, you know, we spoke off air here a little bit, my personal stuff, but I was so happy to hear everything from the beginning of his career to the end, and honestly what he's currently doing now, helping so many people overcome what he overcame. And it was just unbelievable.
Oh, it absolutely was, RJ. And you know, it's okay for you to also say, you know, that you have a big part of that feeling that he had talked about, meaning the sobriety part, because RJ, you had some issues in life and you overcome those as well. And I'm once again proud of you as well.
Absolutely proud. Yeah.
So, you know, maybe just say a little something so everybody knows what we're talking about, so we're not
so like, and I
this show is not about me, so that's why I've always kept it on the back burners. It's about you guys and our guests.
No, but you're part of the team, bro. You're part of the team. Yeah.
So one January 1st, 2021 was my last drink I've ever had since then. So I've been dry for three and a half years.
It I became did try to make issue. You drink one. I did try to make you drink one in Philadelphia. No, in
Chicago.
Chicago. Okay.
I politely said no thank you, and I went, I think I what are you, water or Sprite or something.
I'm such a bad friend.
It is what it is. Hey, I've gotten to that point where I'm like, you know what, thank you but no thank you, and then I'll just go get a Sprite or a Pepsi or Coke or whatever. Coca-Cola it is. But no, anyways, so get back to that. I got to the point where, and I was literally hiding, like, I know you guys know what they are, but the listeners may not, the little pony, like the shot glasses, like the Honor Bar liquor bottles. And I was honestly, I was hiding those. I was taking them. I was hiding them in suitcases here at my house or in my apartment or wherever I was. And then I would ditch them in random garbage cans or what are the heck they are called? Dumpsters. There you go.
Yeah.
And it just got to the point where I was coming home from work, maybe not every day, but semi-regular, where I was coming home and I was drinking between 9 and 12 Yinglings a night and being functional, or at least trying to be functional the next day. Wow. And it just got to the point where some people may have other opinions about me, but I was just an asshole.
No.
I may still be an asshole. I don't know. But anyways, and it got to the point where I'm like, I was going to attempt to lose so much. I was going to lose my family, my wife, my kid at that time. My grandfather, may he rest his soul. You can see his prayer cards behind me. Mm-hmm. He was never one to voice his opinion. He was very old school.
Mm-hmm.
And he got to the point, he's like, he never swore. He was the kind of guy that to punish you, he would look at you. If he looked at you the wrong way, well, you better watch out. But he's like, dude, what are you doing? Like, you got this family now. You're coming out and you're drinking. I would literally drink like probably 2-3 beers in an hour. Mm-hmm. One after another, after another. And I didn't have a shut off valve. You know what I mean? So, and it got to the point where I'm like, I didn't want to go to the extreme of going somewhere. So I started talking to somebody. I started talking to a pastor, and he's like, dude, he got to the root of it. Stuff from the child, like Shannon was saying, stuff from the childhood, stuff from current stuff where you just didn't, I won't get into particulars, but just stuff that mentally I was suppressing. Really? And it got to the point where I'm like, what the hell am I doing? And you know, I've knock on wood, I haven't had any slip ups over the last 3 years, but the temptation has been there occasionally, but I'm like, nope, don't want to go back there. And I can be around it. You know what I mean? I can go to, you know, holidays and parties and stuff, and I'll bring my iced tea in and lemonade or whatever the hell it is.
Well, good
and do it,
you,
but
RJ.
But
well,
I just and,
exactly.
I really encourage a lot of people, because you don't know what other people are going through until you physically either talk to them in person or you listen to them, like what Shannon was talking about. But I really encourage a lot of people to do that if you think it's affecting you. And I'm not saying you don't. You come home, you have a couple beers, and go to bed, and whatever. Great. You just need something to unwind. Fantastic. But, you know, sometimes you gotta know when enough is enough, basically.
Well,
so with that being said, we'll get a little bit back, on the positive.
No, but that's glad to hear that. Again, in your case as well, RJ, you know, battling demons is not easy, and you did that, and you're succeeding, and keep up the good fight, my brother.
Yeah. Unfortunately, my wife is a fantastic cook, so I found the refrigerator. So I kind of put a little more weight on than I wanted to. But hey,
yeah, I battle those demons every day. So I guess if there's a good demon to battle, I'll battle that.
Those are it. Yeah, what are they? I could call them the Pillsbury Doughboy
demons. But man, I just absolutely love this week, guys. And something else that I've been loving is I've been off all this week, so I've been able to stay up, watch you over on Wrestling Inc. Jimmy, on Monday. You'll be doing it, well, as we're recording tonight, but as you're listening, yeah, it was last night. But I encourage you to go over and check out the YouTube page for Wrestling Inc., yourself and Justin and Triple J, that is, you and Jack and yeah, Justin on Mondays, and then the smorgasbord that is on Wednesday nights there.
It's usually me, Jack, and George Hermosa. So,
So it is the regular. Oh, it's Fridays that was different.
Yeah, I was pinch hitting on Fridays every once in a while, so that's cool. You know, I'm watching it anyway, so why not talk about it?
Why not? But what else? well, sort of watching it. But anyways, what other stuff you got coming up, Jimmy? Because you got you're in high demand, man.
Yeah, it's funny. It's this show's starting to roll on bigger tires, and mm-hmm, you know, it's helping me too, because people want to talk, people want to find out about us and the show and what I'm doing and what you guys are doing. And you know what? I'm more than gracious to let them know. And you know, I love doing this every week. I love doing the Wrestling Inc. stuff every week. I love doing my Ref and Rants every day from Monday to Friday on all my social media platforms. Just finding something to critique for the day, something that might turn the screws and help out a little bit, try to elevate and not bash. I'm not bashing anything. Just like on social media last week, all I made was one comment that I thought Randy Orton was the most complete wrestler in the game today, period. That's all I said. And all of a sudden, what about these guys? And what about you're shitting on AEW? How am I shitting on AEW? I said, this guy, I think, is the best guy in the game going all around, complete wrestler.
Because you can't say shit to these fucking idiots.
And you know what? But you know what? When they come at me, I start to have a little too much fun on the Twitter machine when I fire back, and they don't get that I'm just amusing myself. They think they're getting under my skin, and it makes me laugh even more. So, you know, I got a weird sense of humor. What can I tell you? And then I do my other little things. I almost feel like it's almost inappropriate this week, but if you want to continue some Corderas karaoke, I got another song. I think you'll know who it's dedicated to this week from something Lord. I saw last week. If you want to indulge me.
I've got to put my headset back on. Hold on.
Uh-oh.
RJ has what? Oh, shit.
Oh, nice picture. Oh, here we go. I can't hear
that too. Hey, you can get my ugly mug off of there. You see my ugly mug enough.
There we go.
All right. You ready, Jimmy?
I'm ready when you are, brother. Let's hear it. All my friends know the no-seller. The no-seller is not a storyteller. You hear it?
I hear it.
You getting down?
I hear it. I'm getting down. I love this shit.
All right. We got a little ways to go. A little ways to go.
Hands oh, yeah. On. Everybody get into it now. Let's go now. Come on.
You know who he
Everybody
is? Get the no-seller doesn't know what he's doing. The no-seller, the match he's going to ruin. Yeah.
He's feeling it.
Hey! Get with me, boys.
Oh, I'm with you.
The no-seller dives from real high now. The no-seller seems to want to die. Wow. You're getting the long version today, boys. Here it comes. We got some more.
My chest is hurting for my workout. Goddamn.
Stay with me, boys. The no-seller will jump through glass now. The no-seller is just a dumb ass now. Yeah. Hey, boys. You ready for this? Here comes the finish.
I'm ready.
Take a little trip. Take a little trip. And you will see for yourself. Take a little trip. Take a little trip. This little dying selling L. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much.
Oh, fuck.
And he will be here all week, gentlemen. So make sure you tip your waitresses, and we bid you adieu.
Hey, guess what? You can assume all you want who that was dedicated to. I think you can figure it out.
I already know. Oh, shit. I knew as soon as you said it. That's why I was in tears. I was in fucking tears.
Thank you for indulging me, ladies and gentlemen.
I think this has become a weekly tradition with Corderas Karaoke. Oh, man.
You guys are cool with it? I am.
But I don't know if we can follow that, Brian, but what are ways people can get blocked by you?
I don't care. Let's just 1, 2, 3 out.
On that note, I want to give a quick shout out to JD Hoop, who does the amazing graphics each and every week for the show. This week's graphics for Shannon are absolutely phenomenal. Even JD's been over in my household, even so with Gavin, because he's loves his artwork each and every week. I play all the audio that AJ's done for AJ McKay, that is, for the show. Absolutely phenomenal. So their information is in our show notes as well. So make sure you check them out. Next week, TBD, guys. We are a TBD podcast. Stay tuned to our social medias at Reppin' It Up, both on Instagram and the Twitter gimmick. Other than that, guys, I bid you adieu for Mr. Jimmy Corderas, for Mr. Brian Hebner. I am RJ. We will see you here next week on Reffin' It Up.
Oh, God, that karaoke's great. 1, 2, 3, we out.